हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावरीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवत्सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 86, chapter 81. Sukadev Goswami continued, "Thus seeing how the unconquerable Supreme Lord is nonetheless conquered by his own servants, the Lord's dear Brahmana friend felt the remaining knots of material attachment within his heart being cut by the force of his constant meditation on the Lord." Right? So this positive aspect, absorption of the Lord, and that appreciation of the Lord, then that's what's making it work. That's what we see is then purifying the heart. Means you connect to Krishna and think of him in any way, it will, but you see this devotional, then it's so much more natural and so much more comfortable. And it just flows so much nicer. Does that make sense? In a short time he attained Lord Krishna's supreme abode, the destination of great saints. The Lord always shows Brahman a special favor. Anyone who hears this account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to Brahmanas will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become freed from the bondage of material work. Yeah. Great. It's been a few years.
I heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody appreciates that. So. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, "Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of all living entities, knows everyone's heart very well. He is especially inclined to the Brahmana devotees. Lord Krishna is also called Brahmanya Deva, which means that he is worshipped by the Brahmanas. Therefore, it is understood that a devotee who is fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead has already acquired the position of a Brahmana." Right, so that's the Brahminical culture we're following, but the power behind that is actual our surrender to Krishna. Because when we're talking about Brahman here, yes, all classes of Brahmins, but we see specifically then this story is about Brahmins who are surrendered to Krishna.
Yeah.
Right, so therefore, anybody who is fully surrendered to Krishna is a Brahmin.
Yeah.
Right, so that's the kind that we're talking about, but anyone who's following the Vedic culture, performing the Brahminical activities and following the lifestyle, they're always respected and dear to Krishna because they maintain the Veda.
Yes.
Right? And then that Veda is used in Krishna's service. Right? So, yes.
Would you also mean that he's more inclined towards the devotees who try to follow Varnashram Dharma than those who are kind of...
That's there. He's more inclined because that's what he says. It comes to inspire the pious and to get rid of those who are not so pious. Right? But his actual point is associated with devotees. So then, why the problem with those who don't follow Dharma? They're a problem for the devotees. The ones who do follow Dharma, then if they understand it properly, they'll take up devotional service. Right? But it doesn't mean following the Vedic culture and not being favorable to Krishna. Because otherwise, so many of these big demons, they also follow, like Jarasandha. You know, he takes care of the Brahmins, he does worship of Vishnu, he does all these very nicely, he just doesn't like Krishna. You know, work it out, but that's, you can separate these two. So here, that the whole idea is that anybody who's surrendered to Krishna, who's taken up the process, right, who's gone from Agyata Sukriti to Shraddha, then they're all on that Brahminical platform. It's just as they advance, they become more and more brahminical. So if they have a brahminical conditioning, then you'll see immediately that brahminical aspect with the devotion, but the devotion still won't be more because they're brahminical by... Does that make sense?
Yes.
Now someone who's not brahminical by constitution, but they'll be situated brahminically because of absorption in Krishna and the pancharatric system of lifestyle. But as we see as they go, they'll start developing all those brahminical qualities. Whether they're interested in the external form of the Brahman and performing those particular activities, patana, patana, yajana, those activities, that may not happen. But to be able to be absorbed in the Lord, discuss about the Lord, teach people about the Lord, you know, do worship on the level that they're functioning of the Lord, that will go on very nicely. So you'll see all those brahminical qualities there that are the perfection of brahminical in anyone who's a devotee. The more they advance, the more it's there. Now, technically, whether they want to be involved in those things or not, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, someone is brahminical by nature, then for them to do Shaligram Puja will be, you know, standard. But they may not have so much devotion, but they can technically do it. Now let's say someone's not from that kind of background. So they might find it difficult to do the Shaligram Puja, especially when there's no devotion. But now as they develop devotion, then it's not that they couldn't do it, but it's not necessarily the interesting point because that's not the part of their conditioning that they engage. You know what I'm saying? They don't have that. So for them, it's just that worship. So they may dress the deities nicely, but may not do the technical puja.
Okay. So here, the Brahmana devotee doesn't mean just because he's occupied as a Brahmana.
No, it means that as a Vaishnava, you're automatically a Brahmin. So that's what we mean, but it doesn't mean occupationally all Vaishnavas are Brahmins. That's where we get confused.
Yeah.
So, Vaishnavas go through, they move up on the ashram side and they get second initiation. You know, the brahminical initiation, they live the brahminical lifestyle because that's the perfection of your Brahman position is that of a devotee. So they're living at that, but whether conditionally they will have the nature to be involved in brahminical occupations, meaning not the direct activities of devotional service. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, preaching, studying, preaching, mm-hmm. teaching, these things they may do because this is the highest occupation of a Brahmin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But generally, most Brahmins don't just do that. They work at a position below that in goodness. In other words, they're teaching that's the best. They're teaching the devotional, so they're situated in pure goodness. But activities, occupational activities in goodness may not work for them. But activities, devotional activities, or brahminical activities in pure goodness, that will work for them. Does that make sense? So it's to be able to discern that. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone can distribute books, but they can't do puja. Or they can dress the deities, but they don't like to do any technical stuff. They don't, you know, do all those other things. You know? Or like devotees will come to the temple, do an offering, an artik. You know, like that. You know, it's just like you have a big community, so everyone comes and does something like that. But your full-time pujaris that are there day in, day out, you know, they don't have a break. The other guys, they put in their, you know, do their artik and offering once a week, but then they can't for 2 weeks because they're doing this or doing that, or the kid has to go to the dentist, or, you know, stuff like that. But the full-time pujaris, they get no breaks at all. 7 days, it goes on like that, and it never changes. And they don't think otherwise. You know, if someone comes along and does that, and, you know, thinks, okay, you know, go to India, go to Vrindavan or Mayapur, they'll be happy to do. But if it didn't come along, they'd also just do the service. Does that make sense? So that you may not be able to see many devotees can do. But to be engaged in devotional activities, and I have the brahminical understanding of be engaged in those direct activities, which are the most powerful and important, that anybody can do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So their consciousness is that, but it's not that their conditioning is that. And you could say, no, but one's automatically the other, just because it's just like this. Let us say in the kitchen there is one pot. okay, and we use it for boiling the rice and this and that, and, you know, so khichdi or, you know, whatever we can do in the pot. And now if we take this, no, but we're not the body, so you can do anything. So now if a pure devotee walked into the kitchen and he wanted to fry something, would that pot turn into a frying pan? No, it's still a pot. So that's the whole point, is that we take up the Vaishnava, it's still our conditioning, will still be what it is. It will be in its purest state, but it still remains in that state. So that's the whole point, is that on the Vaishnava platform, ashram, then we can see all devotees can do puja. But from Varna, not very many. Right? You know what I'm saying? You go to any temple that has a big deity worship going on, how many devotees can be engaged full time in that worship? Right? There's a handful. 2, 3, 4. But there's 300 to 500 in the community, or 1,000 or 10,000. So that's the point, is that devotionally everybody, so from the ashram side, they're devotees, and so they're Brahmins from that side, but from the Varna side, then no. But it doesn't matter, because the aspect of the Brahminical culture and practices that they're doing from the ashram side is the highest level of Brahminical activities. So it's not that they're losing out. It's just that those are the things that you don't do. So for a Brahmin, that the technical things are fine for him. They're not, you know, a distraction or that. So if you see someone can do the Shaligram Puja and remain pleasant and nice, then that's what they're supposed to do. If they start to become hard and nasty and superior and all those things, then they shouldn't be doing it. It means if no one else is there, then better they do it than nobody. But, you know, eventually they won't last, because it's not their nature. Now, if they increase the devotional side, then yes, you could do, but it won't be, but why would you do? If someone else is there, why would you do? No one's there to do the puja, then someone who, even though they don't have the nature but are situated in pure devotion, then they could do it. But as soon as someone has the technical nature to do it comes along, then naturally then they would do it. You adjust. Does that make sense? Yes.
Marsh, historically, before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, basically nobody worried about who is who in the Varnashrama, you know, situation.
Right.
But then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he introduced this Brahman initiation. And then Srila Prabhupada took it even further and gave it to the ladies. And then it apparently created a lot of confusion within the society and amongst Hindus, because they don't understand and we ourselves don't understand. So how can we reconcile?
Understand. First we have to distinguish between Vedic, Pancharatrik, and Bhagavat initiations here.
Right.
So the aspect of when we call Brahman initiation, there's two kinds of initiation, Vedic and Pancharatrik. Right? So the Pancharatrik there, the women would also accept that. Just they didn't use the Vedic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So in other words, the Brahma Gayatri, that women didn't get, but all the other Gayatris, that they would have. So that was the standard thing. That's just how it worked. Does that make sense?
Was it for their meditation? Because they still didn't engage on the altar and stuff.
In the home they might do things and stuff like that. It just depends upon how strict they were or things like that, what line they were. Like the Vallabhas, they would do. Shris, then they wouldn't. They would assist the husband. Like that. So it just depends upon the line and all that. So that said, so the only thing that Prabhupada went with was the Vedic Upanayanam for the women.
Right.
And that was only because they turned it into a political position. It wasn't based on a spiritual importance. It was that the women went on strike, that they're not going to be involved in Krishna consciousness unless they also get that. Otherwise Prabhupada wasn't going to give, because you don't give, because it's explained that it's a Purusha mantra, so that's why men use it, to get over that Purusha mood. But at the same time, is they have women like that who are willing to walk out on the spiritual master and make a whole, you know, go on strike, then you're dealing with a bunch of men that just happen to play with their hair a lot. You know? And so therefore then, okay, they chanted, fine. What's the big deal?
There's no loss.
There's no loss. But that's the point. It's not necessary. It's not that they can't use it, but you don't need it. It's kind of like, okay, just in a very general sense. Does anybody have to tell the women to, let's say, freshen up and stuff like that? No. But do you have to tell the men? Yeah. That's the point. So they don't require it. So if they use it, it's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? But it's just it's one of those things that it's not going to create a problem. But so it's devotees don't understand. That's why others don't understand. We'll say the Hindus don't understand. You explain what's there. But they can't tell the difference between the Pancharatrik and the Vedic. So the Pancharatrik the women all have. Like Pishima, Prabhupada's sister, Pishima, she had all the same mantras. They just don't have the Brahma Gayatri. Because traditionally you get the Brahma Gayatri not from your spiritual master, you get it from your household guru. Like that. You are from Dvija families and you had Upanayanam. And that was there. That's why it's called Upanayanam, to bring near. It's not actually, technically from that side, it's not a spiritual initiation. Right? It gives you the adhikar to work in those areas. But then with the Pancharatrik, that gave you the right to worship the deities in the temple and things like that. So the women would have that and they could do these kind of things. But the big temples, the women wouldn't be involved because as soon as that's there, it's a trip. Like that. It's just like, okay, the man's the head pujari. He may be strict or not or this or that, it goes on. But the woman's the head pujari, then everybody's under the thumb. I mean, absolutely everybody. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that when you get down into the mundane thing, women in charge are much heavier than men in charge. You know, if there's less women in charge, then in that, because of that environment, but if it's accepted that they're in charge, like head pujaris in our movement, of being women is a standard thing. So then they'll be very, very aggressive. Or can be. A few are nice, but they can tend. If you have a really heavy head pujari who's a lady, no one will think it's strange. It's standard. You know, but as head temple presidents, then they may be a little more careful, because it's not a standard thing. You know, you can do, but it's not that there's very many. Because temple president is just management, that's it. Where's the juice? But in deity worship, at least you can dress the deities, it's about Krishna, you can do, you know, so there's that more personal aspect. So they'll work there better than, you know, so the natures don't, it doesn't change. So then in this, that's always there. Now the Hindus don't know about Pancharatra. So they won't understand that aspect. Right? And then amongst the Gaudiyas, they don't understand these two separations. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then everybody, because they're getting the Pancharatrik, they would get the Vedic. Because the Vedic is, the rule is, if you haven't gotten it by 16, you can't get it. Does that make sense? If by the time you're 16, you don't get the Upanayanam ceremony, then you're banned from getting it for the rest of your life. You're considered just, you know, you're now a Dvija Bandhu. That's just the way it works. So that means then the parents, and when you get it, because you have the training, so that means the parents would be forced to see that their children are trained. Is that, you understand? That's how it works. So, but because the Panchara, because therefore on that bodily platform, the body can't get it past that point. Right? So then, that means when you turn 16. So it means you have to get it by the end of your 15th year. And if we really want to be strict, Brahminically, they count before your birth. That is first year.
Just from conception.
Yeah, they count from conception. So when you say a Brahmin goes to Gurukul at 5, they mean from conception. But if you don't, you call from birth, it'll also work. But I'm just saying, if you're being more, you know what I'm saying? So it just means you see it goes down. So that means all adults coming to Krishna consciousness, their only qualification is because when you take the second the Pancharatrik initiation, then it's said to be like, you know, iron is changed, you know, like bell metals changed into gold. Is that the body changes, so therefore now the body is new again. So therefore now you can get it. But that's the only reason. It's not because, oh, I'm so intellectual, I'm so brahminical. No, none of that. You're fallen. If you haven't gotten brahminical initiation by, that means Vedic, by the time you're 16, you're fallen. That's it. But be happy. Dvija Bandhu is at least a better position than a Malechra Yavana. So, you know, it's not bad. Could be worse. But they're just, you know, Shudras. So they become Kayasthas and stuff like that. You know, they're good at that stuff. They're smart. They're from that background. They have the genes, but they don't have the drive, so they take up service as Shudras, doing work for Dvijas, but responsible positions that you don't want to just give anybody. Like that. You know, they have the brain for it. They can relate to it. You know, it's just like, let's say, a person from a business family but doesn't have any business ability, they can work within the business and do responsible things. They just can't make the decision what will make profit. But any work within the business, they can all do it perfectly. But someone else has to tell them what to do. So like that, they'll do those kind of things. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the thing. So if we understand these things, then we'll see is that there's no confusion. Because they're looking at it from some technical points, but they don't actually understand Vedic, Pancharatrik, and Bhagavat. And so Bhagavat has nothing to do with the conditioning. But it does have to do with the devotion. So therefore, you progress for us by your commitment to Krishna consciousness. It's not a matter of time or this or that. It's commitment to Krishna consciousness. You know. So you see, Prabhupada be initiating people. It take many years. Some people, I can remember one devotee. He got first initiation, and 3 months later, he got second. Or no, I think he got first and second together at 3 months. Well, you hear of some others getting first and second at 6 months. And I think somebody else, first and second, they got together at 6 months and sannyas at 1 year. Like that. But those were more exceptions. But everybody else is after 6 months, you get first, and after a year after that, you get second. Unless it was India, then it was after 6 months. That was basically kind of the standard. But so it was a matter of the surrender to Krishna consciousness. So that's what makes the Bhagavat work. Does that make sense? And then because of that, then we'll qualify for the Pancharatrik, and because of that, then we'll qualify for the Vedic. So the only reason the Vedic mantras works is because we're chanting. But if we weren't, we wouldn't have the material qualification to be involved in that. Does that make sense? So that's why then emergency, we do it until people that actually can do it come along. We'll have to wait a few generations, but, you know. Then we can go back to, you know, yeah. Like Haridas Thakur, just chant and stay away from the temple because we're not qualified for anything, yes.
The devotees, they compare, you know, the Gaudiya Math style and the ISKCON style.
They compare the Gaudiya Math style and the ISKCON style.
Of initiation, they say that.
Of initiation, okay.
Yeah, so, like, the two initiations, the first and the second, has been given together. I mean, there's no distinction as in Gaudiya Math.
The Gaudiya Math gives the two together.
Yeah.
First and second. Are you sure?
Devotees have said that, you know.
Devotees have said, but the point is do they know what they're talking about? Just because they said doesn't mean that. See, it's like that's what we explained about 6 months ago. Just because they're a professional doesn't mean that they know anything outside of their profession. That should be very, very clear, because that's the way the real world works. So they're working on their pride that, yes, you know, I know, you know, I got an MBA, or I'm a lawyer, or this or that. Yeah, you know your area, but outside your area, you don't know anything. So don't just take it because I'm smart in this area, I'm smart in every area.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of them spent time with the Gaudiya Math? Do they know these things? How do they know? Right? How many Gaudiya Maths over there? Right? How many Gaudiya Maths here?
20.
Yeah, between the Yogpi and Hulagat, there's 20 Gaudiya Maths.
That's all of them.
That's all of them.
Yeah, basically everybody's represented here. But there are more beyond. But still, most everybody's represented. And that was when I counted, that was back in the 80s. So there's probably more now. Probably like 25 or more. Right? So the whole point is that do we know what they do? Because they all don't do the same thing. Because this idea of splitting first and second, that's from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So to say the Gaudiya Math doesn't do that, that's where it's from. They don't practice it now. Hey, that's not our problem. But he's the one that split it. Before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you got both together. That meant you had this surrender and that of the second initiate to qualify for second initiated, and then you got them both together. Because it's one samskar, bunch of samskar. So we've divided, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur divided between the first three and the last two. So the first three we call first, and the last two we call second. Right? Now, here's fun. You have first, in the Gaudiya Math, you're not connected with any math.
Yeah.
Only if you have second, now you're committed to that math. Otherwise, you take first from this math, second from that math, they don't care.
Why?
Because they don't consider it, you're not really initiated. That's why Prabhupada says real initiated is second. But you are, for us, because we're following what Bhaktisiddhanta said, you're connected to the Guru. It's the first part of a continuing. But when we get the last, then you'll say it's complete. But still, the connection's made. But they don't count that.
So Maharaj,
you know what I'm saying?
The question was this, you know, which I was going to do that, about the real initiation. So they say that real initiation is only when one gets Brahman, and therefore if one leaves the body with only for first initiation, then the success is not possible, you know, for that particular jiva.
Success is not possible. So remembering Krishna at the time of death isn't a factor in success.
So they say, you know,
yeah, but that's what people say about what they say. But I've never heard that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, here in Mayapur, we've been interacting with Gaudiya Math myself personally, since 76. And I've never heard it. Right? You heard it? No. So I'm saying, they can come up with all they want sitting over there, but I've never heard of it. Maybe some individuals will say that, but I've never heard that as a standard. Like that. Now, in there also, they put an emphasis also on, means on the tradition of Namaguru. Means the one who gives you the name. You know, because before it was rare. You had people following the Vedic system. And so the Upanayan would be there for those who would qualify in those lines. But then who would be Vaishnavas and all that? So then who you get the name from, then that would be considered significant. And that was considered you're connected to the line. Like that. Then you have to actually surrender to Guru and take up the process. Because the holy name is not, how you say? The holy name's not limited by the regulations of Vedic and Pancharatric. So that means if they have faith in Krishna, the form of Krishna, they're chanting Hare Krishna, then if they leave their body and remember Krishna, then they'll go back to Godhead.
So then can you say that? The holy name, because it is related to the Bhagavad.
The holy name is related to the Bhagavad. Actually, we would probably say the holy name is the Bhagavad.
Yes. And therefore, one should not give so much of consideration to Pancharatra.
So, because it's connected to the Bhagavad, the holy name is connected to Bhagavad, or is Bhagavad, then we should not give so much importance to Pancharatra. That's fine as if you're liberated. Because if you're on the liberated platform, then for you, simply just hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness from senior Vaishnavas and then accepting one of those as the person to guide you in the process of developing prema, then you are initiated. That is Bhagavad initiation. Mm-hmm. Bhagavad is that you accept. You know. So that's what he says. So what does initiation mean? It's accepting Guru as good as God. So that's the Pancharatric aspect. Bhagavad aspect. The Pancharatric is you went through this ritual, now you have the right to worship the deity and all these things. Mm-hmm. Right? How you say? Right to remain materially silent. anything material you do will be used in the court of Yamaraj against you. You know, all those things. Yeah. So all that thing it has to be. Yeah. Well, not Yamaraj, but the modes of nature will use it against you. So, that aspect is there, so that's already done. So that's where you don't have to worry about the Pancharatra. But if you're conditioned, you require the Pancharatra. So it's not that, oh, we don't need to deal with that, but you're conditioned. So you have to have it. Without it, you're not going to elevate yourself.
So can you then say that Pancharatra initiation must be
have to realize even when there's no tracker, it's hard to hear what you're saying.
Can we say that the Pancharatra initiation should be given to those devotees who have the Brahmanical Varna? Then it is.
Should the Pancharatra initiation be given to those with the Brahmanical Varna? No. It's who has faith in Krishna and has that surrender. And who can practice on that, on the Bhagavat platform. They get the Pancharatra. Who gets Upanayanam, that will generally be restricted to dvijas. Nowadays they like to say it's just Brahmins, but it's technically for dvijas. Now, if someone has a Shudra nature, and so then they're not going to be involved in technical deity worship and like that, and they don't get second initiation, it's not a problem, as long as they have that faith. The whole point is faith is what drives the whole thing. You get Shraddha, that brings you to the first stage. When Shraddha increases, then you take up the association of devotees. When it increases more, you take up the process. When it more, then you give up the attachment. More, you become steady. More, you become like that. So Shraddha is what's increasing. So we have to understand is how Prabhupada gave it. That's the proper way of following it. That someone comes into Krishna consciousness through Purushcharya Vidhi, they qualify themselves to move forward. The holy name doesn't require that, it's just that these are activities that purify them, so they start to take the association of devotees seriously and therefore come to Bhajana Kriya. Holy name doesn't require Purushcharya. If someone just by association has that faith, they're ready for initiation. But if they don't, then the Purushcharya will then purify them. So they go through Purushcharya. So Prabhupada said, we have the first 6 months, that's the Purushcharya. Nowadays, in some yatras, it's like 10 years, I think, Purushcharya Vidhi. And so then you get purified. And so then that brings you to that platform. So then you can take the Pancharatra. And then when the faith is more, then you get the second half of it. So that was just the idea is people can be practicing dynamically Krishna consciousness even only with the first initiation. Right? So therefore then you have Nama Guru, and then they don't even give a name or stuff in other words the Diksha Gurus that are given, they'll give the first initiation, but that's just to connect you. The Nama Guru, then you're chanting, then with that then it's Pancharatra, so then you're connected to the line, to the Gaudiyas. I mean, you know, specifically to ISKCON or the Gaudiya Math or like that. Otherwise, you can be connected to all kinds of Gaudiyas, you know, just by the holy name. But you've heard the proper, you've heard it in the line, like this, and so it moves up.
In cases wherein the Nam Guru leaves the body, and
in the cases where the Nam Guru leaves the body, you need to rehear the name.
The first initial. So what happens? So my question is then can the devotee take second initiation from a different group? Is it bona fide? Because
would he get second from someone else? We have no problem, and Gaudiya Math has no problem. Because for them, who you get first from is not the main guru. Mm-hmm. Potentially, generally, most people who they take first from will take second from them. But if it's someone else, they don't get worried about it. But for us, we following Bhakti Siddhanta is one initiation. So therefore, who the first is, that's who the second is. If something happens, they die, and then you take second from someone else. It's no big deal. But if the first is there, you don't take from someone else. Okay? Yeah, in other words, they shouldn't speculate so much. Right. Yeah. you end up with too much koi. You know? Koi? Koi? Not the fish. The puffed rice. You take the rice and you puff it. You leave the husk on. You know, it's like popcorn. And it just blows up. Right? So if you take the husk off and you heat the rice, it'll get a little bit bigger, like double in size. So you have the muri. So that basically all India uses. But then you have this other one where they take the rice without taking the husk off and heat it in the sand, and it pops like popcorn, but it's popped rice. So you have puffed rice, and this is popped rice. And then you have flat rice, right? So varieties of rice. So this popped rice, then 1 kilo of that is a huge bag. I mean, it's really a lot. Right? In other words, it has no substance. Basically, is what it means. So then, Prabhupada gave there's that Bengali saying that when you have nothing to do, then you make popped rice. It makes lots of noise. It has lots of volume. It's like this, but it's nothing. Yeah. So, you know, unless you use it a lot for the deities making sweets and that, then hey, go for it. But otherwise, not so important. Right? Because these are traditions. These are there. These have been documented and explained back when the discussion was there in 86 about these things. Just the problem is then you have to read. Right? Less fun than hearing through the grapevine.
Mostly many of these things become more complicated because we tend to lose the culture, because in day-to-day culture also most of this aspect has a semblance with our own families and mm-hmm. how you interact.
Mm-hmm.
And the same applies even after initiation, because here it's lost, there also the same tendency, like people tend to superimpose that, okay, from one then we can go to next, then how...
Yeah, but then it's only if there's some tradition. In other words, if the devotee's talking about these different levels, they themselves are from Brahmin families, and, you know, like the 12, they actually got Upanayanam and then have been practicing since then. Then, okay, there's something to discuss. But when you have devotees discussing this, and they're from Dvija families but never got Upanayanam, you know, why are they talking about this? Why are they so authoritative? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is stick to things you know. Like that. Because the point is understanding Krishna, that everybody can do. These technical points, then you have to study them. You have to hear from authority, because you can't just hear from here and there, because it won't work. Like that. Because we have to remember, it is coming from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So there is a system. Now, who's following, how much they're following in this, but this is how it goes. Some follow nicely, and that's very good. Some don't, and it gets distracted. Does that make sense? But he already has set the thing, and then Srila Prabhupada worked out the timing. You know, whether they used the 6 month and 1 year in the Gaudiya Math, that's another thing. I've never heard that. Prabhupada found that that's what worked at the time. Like that. And most devotees use that, but in recent times, they've been using longer times, because they find, as before, you moved into the temple, you were under intense training. Like I the first thing I remember when we were, you know, riding in the bus, you know, heading off down the road, that Bir Krishna Maharaj then explained to me was the 64 items of devotional service. So when I ended up in St. Louis 2 weeks later, I knew them all. You know, that includes, you know, and then you, after that, you read all the offenses that, you know, that come after that, the chapters after that, all the 32 offenses. And so you know all those things. And this was in the first 2 weeks. And that was probably only because we were on the road, right? You know, so, you understand? So it's like everybody tells you something. In those days, you didn't need a bhakti program, because everybody would tell you what to do. You know, don't do that, you gotta do this. This is how you put on your dhoti. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. You know, just so within, you know, weeks, you knew everything of the rules. Then you had to, you know, develop the devotion and all that. process. So then in 6 months, yeah, you are ready. But then when you have a community, when, you know, they come to the temple now and again, have heard a little bit and this and that, it may take them years to develop that kind of faith. Mm. You know, hence the 10-year in some communities. Right? Because otherwise it just takes that long. And we've had devotees before that spend that time. I think Sachinanda Maharaj, you know, back in the 90s, it was 6 to 10 years. Like, he already, you know, cutting edge, right? You know, he told him, I think it was 8 years. Or 10, yeah, you say 10, but if they're more sincere, generally more so 8. If they were second generation, they would come out at 6 or less. And it just depended on the culture and the So the point is there's a standard of devotion that you're looking for, that you're sincere and going to take it to heart. Just like first means you are going to chant 16 rounds every day. That's going to happen. You're going to follow the principle. If there's some weakness, it does not, then better you wait. Right? So that's the whole thing. And then second means now you have that brahminical lifestyle, that cleanliness, that seeing, that regularity, all these different things. So you're chanting, all those things just go very well. Now you can move on. But if it's still a problem with chanting or the principle, then why would there be second? You know, so that's the whole idea, is that it just it's just a matter of time. So Prabhupada worked that out for that time. We see devotees later, some people can do that and some it's longer. So it's just the people and how it works, but the principle is the same. It doesn't have to change. So now if you have people that are that sincere, then them getting it quickly, what's the problem? But it may not be the general, but it's what's the problem? Okay. We're good on this. We're happy. This kind of the Gaudiya Math methods and okay. Okay.
Therefore, it is understood.
Okay. Yes. Therefore, it is understood that a devotee has fully surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has already acquired the position of a Brahman. Without becoming a Brahman, one cannot approach the Supreme Brahman. Right? So that means Brahman means one who is interested in Brahman. One who wants to know Brahman. That's a Brahman. Right? So someone who wants to know Krishna, that means they're a Brahman. That's why just knowing the technical points of a Brahman, but not wanting to know Krishna, then that's a lower position than someone who wants to know Krishna. Yes. So that's the actual point. Now within that, there are no more technical things or not. That's just how they're going to situate themselves occupationally. But devotionally, it's not going to make any difference. Yes. Right? So that makes sense. One cannot, without becoming a Brahmana, one cannot approach the Supreme Brahman, Lord Krishna. Krishna is especially concerned with vanquishing the distress of his devotees. And he is the only shelter of pure devotees. So vanquishing the distress of devotees in general, but that basically means by becoming Krishna conscious. And he's the only shelter of pure devotees because that's the whole point. It's exclusive to Krishna. And the more they advance, that exclusivity becomes more focused. So when it becomes 100%, that then brings you to the point where now you can function in a spiritual form. Mm-hmm. Now you can act within pure devotional service. Does that make sense? Conclusion. Although Lord Krishna is unconquerable, he nevertheless agrees to be conquered by his devotees. Lord Krishna knows everyone's determination and everyone's want. He knew that, driven by extreme poverty, Sudama had come at the request of his wife, who was pained that she did not have means to serve her husband well. Thinking of Sudama as his very dear class friend, he knew that Sudama's love for him as a friend was never tainted by any desire for material benefit. Right? Because they're actual friends. Like the coward boys, they don't have anything to gain from Krishna. Mm-hmm. Like that. Krishna thought, Sudama has not come asking for asking anything from me. Being obliged by the request of his wife, he has come to see me just to please her. Conquered by Sudama's pure love, Lord Krishna therefore decided he would give more material opulence to then give more material opulence than could be imagined even by the King of Heaven. Is that good? Okay. Chapter 82. Krishna and Balaram meet the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Pratigya. Everything exists in Krishna, but still he is not personally present everywhere. Right? So that's the second point of the Chaturshloki. You know? For some reason. In a lot we've been discussing the first point, that he is everything. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, that he is everything. Now this one here is bringing to the second point. He's everything, but still he's separate from that everything as a person. It's all his energies, the transformation, so he is everything, but at the same time, he is a person, is separate from those transformations. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how the Yadavas and many other kings met at Kurukshetra during a solar eclipse and discussed topics concerning Lord Krishna. It also relates how Krishna met Nanda Maharaj and the other residents of Vrindavan at Kurukshetra and gave them great joy. Hearing that a total eclipse of the sun was soon to occur, people from all over Bharatvarsha, including the Yadavas, converged at Kurukshetra. To earn special pious credit. After the Yadavas had bathed and performed other obligatory rituals, they noticed that kings of Matsya, Ushinara, and other places had also come, as well as Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd community of Vraja, who were always feeling the intense anxiety of separation from Krishna. Right? So, isn't that interesting? It's here is that they noticed the kings of Matsya, Ushinara, and other places had also come. And then what do you expect to hear? You know, this one came with his armies, or this one on his elephants, or this one came with great pomp, or this one, you know, he was taking the humble position, right? But then when you hear Nanda Maharaj, then what is the point being made? Those who are always feeling the intense anxiety and separation. Yeah, different. So that's the difference between the different realms, right?
And also, their main desire to come there is because Krishna will be
there. Krishna is there. Yeah, they've all come. The others have come for the piety.
Yes.
Yadavas come because Krishna is going, so they're going with him. Yes. Others are coming because it's the pious thing to do. But the Vrajabasis are coming only because Krishna is there. Whether they take a bath or not, that's another thing. When they see Krishna, they're good. But since you're there, you take a bath. You go, that's what everyone's doing. But, you know, so the bath is just an excuse to see Krishna. The Yadavas, overjoyed to see all these old friends, embraced them one by one as they shed tears of happiness. Their wives also embraced one another with great pleasure. When Queen Kunti saw her brother Vasudeva and other members of her family, she put aside her sorrow. Yet still she said to Vasudeva, "O brother, I am so unfortunate because all of you forgot me during my tribulations. Alas, even one's relatives forget a person whom providence no longer favors." Vasudeva replied, "My dear sister, everyone is merely a plaything of fate. We Yadavas were so harassed by Kamsa that we were forced to scatter and take shelter in foreign lands. So there was no way for us to keep in touch with you." Good save. Right? The kings present were struck with wonder upon beholding Lord Krishna and his wives, and they began to glorify the Yadavas for having gotten the Lord's personal association. Seeing Nanda Maharaj, the Yadavas were delighted. So the other kings are impressed by the Yadavas and Krishna and his queens and then all of his associates and that there. But the Yadavas, they're absorbed in the Vrajavasis. Like that. Seeing King Nanda, the Yadavas were delighted, and each of them embraced him tightly. Vasudeva also embraced Nanda with great joy and remembered how, when Vasudeva was tormented by Kamsa, Nanda had taken Vasudeva's sons, Krishna and Balaram, under his protection. Balaram and Krishna embraced Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jashoda and bowed down to them. But the two lords' throats choked up with emotion, and they could say nothing to them. Nanda and Jashoda lifted their two sons onto their laps and embraced them, right? So it doesn't matter how big. The other kings are there, and they're impressed with the Yadavas, you know, and Krishna and his wives, and you know, and just their magnificence, right? And then Nanda and Yashoda see Krishna and Balaram, they just pick him up, put him on their laps, and start embracing him and crying. And, like that. Yeah, so.
And they are maybe around 100 years.
Sorry?
And they are about maybe 100 years.
Yeah, they're like that. So it's before the Kurukshetra War, but yeah, they maybe they're right up there. They're not little kids. Nanda and Yashoda lifted their two sons onto their laps and embraced them. And in this way, they relieved the distress of separation. Right? So there's two aspects of him as the sons. Right? There's Vasudeva's aspect, and now he's appreciating how Nanda had taken care. And then there's Nanda and Yashoda, how it's just that sense of possession.
Yes.
So in other words, they only have a sense of possession of Krishna as their son.
Yes.
But Vasudeva and Devaki, they'll sometimes have, sometimes not.
Yes.
Yes. Right, so when they have, they'll act as parents, and when not, then they'll see him as the Supreme Lord.
Mm.
Right? Does that make sense? So them seeing as the Supreme Lord then affects that sense of possession. But with Nanda and Yashoda, even if he is God, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
It doesn't affect their sense of possession.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Rohini and Devaki both embraced Yashoda, and remembering the great friendship she had shown them, told her that the kindness she had done by raising and supporting Krishna and Balaram could not be repaid even with the wealth of Indra. Then the Supreme Lord approached the young cowherd girls in a secluded place. He consoled them by pointing out that he is all-pervasive, being the source of all energies, and thus he implied they could never be separated from him, right? The same thing he told them with the message of Uddhava, and basically the same thing that he said after he left them at the Rasa dance. And then when they came back and he talked about the different things like that, about the Atmarama position, you know, like that. So it's the same thing, because that's how they always keep in touch. It doesn't mean that it won't feel like separation, but you're always in touch with Krishna. The point is whether you're dealing with his original form or dealing with his remembrance, which is non-different, you're fully with Krishna. There's no difference in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But one will give a feeling of sambhag, one will give the feeling of vipralamba.
Yes.
But it's the same thing as far as the absorption and the reality of it.
Yes.
Somebody says, we tend to make too much distinction because here, time and space. But there, you're not dealing with time and space. It's a matter of just the flavor. Right. Having been at last long last reunited with Krishna, the gopis prayed simply to have his lotus feet manifest in their hearts. Shloka Anusharana, summary of verses. Verses 1 to 30, the Yadavas visit Kurukshetra. 31 to 48, Krishna and Balaram meet the inhabitants of Vrindavan. 1 to 30, the Yadavas visit Kurukshetra. Sukadeva Goswami said, once while Balaram and Krishna were living in Dwarka, there occurred a great eclipse of the sun, just as if the end of Lord Brahma's day had come. BBT purport states, as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, the words Atta and Ekada are commonly used in Sanskrit literature to introduce a new topic. Here, they especially indicate that the reunion of the Yadavas and Vrishnis at Kurukshetra is being narrated out of chronological sequence. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains in his Vaishnav Toshani commentary that the events of this 82nd chapter occur after Lord Baladev's visit to Vraja, chapter 65, and before Maharaj Yudhishthira's Rajasuya sacrifice, 74. Because we see is that this is happening before they met there. Krishna hadn't been back to Vrindavan. Right? And this was after Lord Balaram had gone to Vrindavan. Right? Because he went at one point. But Krishna hadn't. So then they all met at Kurukshetra. Because then after the Rajasuya, when Krishna went back to Dwarka, then there was all that fighting with Shalva and Dantavakra and all that. And then I think it's Dantavakra attacked Mathura.
Yes.
Then Krishna went up there, and while he was there, then he went to Vrindavan.
Yes.
And visited there.
Yes.
I think stayed 2 months.
Yes.
Like, so Balaram stayed for 2 months when he went, Krishna stayed for 2 months, Uddhava stayed for 2 months.
Yes.
It's just, that's the way to go. Okay?
Okay.
But one should remember that's only for really good, those who you really want around. Don't think, well, I'm a guest and they stayed 2 months, so I can stay 2 months. No, no. Guest means one day. That's the rule.
From evening to morning.
Huh?
Not even 24 hours.
That means from where you arrive today, then that the rest of that day through the night, and then the next day, and at some point the next day you're leaving.
Not in morning.
I mean, it would be, but it's whatever would be the appropriate time. You know, if it's summer, then it would be earlier. If it's winter, it might be later. You know, some places they want you to take breakfast and then go, you know, and some places have early breakfast. Or, you know, it means like this. But basically, it means by breakfast, you'll be gone. So you'll be there for dinner and breakfast. But you might be there earlier, so you might be there for lunch. You know, they might see you and then invite you, and then you'll stay for lunch, dinner, and then breakfast, like that. So it just depends. Yeah, staying for 3 days, then that's considered a great piety by the host. You know, they don't have to do extend for 3 days, but to extend the welcome for 3 days in that way, that's very pious. Otherwise, after the first day, now you can treat deal with them as you would friends and relatives.
Yes.
They don't get, means they're always taken care of, but they don't get that the whole house stops for them. The whole house stops for 1 day. After that, means you can extend it for 3 if they're very special and like that. But at some point, it adjusts. So we should not think like that. This must be so, the Acharya reasons, since during the eclipse at Kurukshetra, all the Kurus, including Dhritarashtra, Yudhishthira, Bhishma, and Drona, met in friendship and happily shared the company of Sri Krishna. Right, so it had to be before Rajasuya, because at that time, that's where the enmity, you know, came up again. After Rajasuya, on the other hand, Duryodhana's jealousy against the Pandavas became irrevocably inflamed. Before that, would come up, go down, come up, go down, but now it's just irrevocable, right? Soon after this, Duryodhana challenged Yudhishthira and his brothers to the gambling match, in which he cheated them of their kingdom and exiled them to the forest. Right after the Pandavas returned from exile, the great battle of Kurukshetra took place, during which Bhishma and Drona were killed. So it's not logically possible for the solar eclipse at Kurukshetra to have happened after the Rajasuya sacrifice. Because afterwards, then they would have, they're not friendly, they wouldn't be together, and the Pandavas would have been exiled. And then as soon as they came back, there was a war, so everyone was finished. So basically, when the Rajasuya, after the Rajasuya, that's when the pastimes start to, you know, they're going towards that later point. It means it's, of course, the Pandavas in the forest and all that is a very major thing. The battle of Kurukshetra is the most major out of it. And so because there, then Krishna is, you know, doing, as he said, removing the burden of the earth. Right, because before that, then he's gotten rid of armies or a few demons, but now you're getting rid of all those kings and all their armies, and so now those won't come up again like that. Right? Sukadev Goswami continued, knowing of this eclipse in advance, O King, many people went to the holy place known as Samanta Panchaka in order to earn pious credit. The BBT purport states, Vedic astronomers of 5,000 years ago could predict eclipses of the sun and moon just as well as our modern astronomers can. The knowledge of the ancient astronomers were much further, however, since they understood the karmic influences of such events. Solar and lunar eclipses are generally very inauspicious, with certain rare exceptions. But just as the otherwise inauspicious Ekadasi day becomes beneficial when used for the glorification of Lord Hari, so the time of an eclipse is also advantageous for fasting and worship. The holy pilgrimage site known as Samanta Panchaka is located at Kurukshetra, the sacred ground of the Kurus, where the Kuru king. So Samanta Panchaka is the place technically named, but because it's the holy place within the Kurus, it's called Kurukshetra. Right? where the kings that where the king Kuru kings and Kuru king's predecessors performed many Vedic sacrifices. Like that. The Kurus were thus advised by learned Brahmanas that this would be the best place for them to observe vows during the eclipse. Long before their time, Lord Parasaram had done penance at Kurukshetra to atone for his killings. Samantapachika, the five ponds he dug there, were still present at the end of Dwarpara as they are even today. Right, so that's very, because he dug those to purify himself of all bad reactions, so therefore if you want to purify yourself, that's the place to go, especially for kings. Just right here. Is there a sign out there that says go extremely slow for this particular 10 feet or something?
Maybe because of the school, I'm not sure.
Oh, okay, because people are coming and going. Oh, okay, so they're coming and going. Okay. That makes sense.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandini.